coisas que me dizem com assistência assim, estou aí.
Yeah.
We're going to go ahead and gavel in. Good morning. This is a subcommittee of the Subcommittee of General Government, and we are going to go ahead and have a public hearing on House Bill 5053, the Board of Tax Practitioners. And we're going to modify the way that we're going to go about this morning. Welcome, Representative Johnson.
Good morning.
Representative Johnson is an excellent attender to these meetings, always does a great job, but if he needs to be excused at any point, always has a good reason for it.
Well, and I am going to have to be excused, Mr. Chair. I have a bill.
Oh, wonderful.
Novel concept. But I won't be gone very long.
You still have one that's alive in this process. If it's a live one, let's all jump on. Let's see, Satish will tell you what the rule is, but there are no acronyms that are used in this subcommittee right. Without buying them first, and that money goes to the American Cancer Society. And let's see, representing our legislative fiscal office is Dallas Wyan, and Karen Segers is our clerk this morning. So with that, the House having a full quorum, we will proceed then, and we'll start with Satish Upadhyay this morning and go through the walk together.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and members of the subcommittee. This is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services, and I will talk to you about the Governor's budget for the Board of Tax Practitioners for the 2003-2005 biennium. And if you turn to page 2 of the presentation document, the total budget consists of $880,915 total funds. This is a 4% decrease from the 2001-2003 legislatively approved budget for the 5th special session. The budget gets rid of one permanent full-time investigator position and decreases the services and supplies budget by about 17% because of a projected decrease in revenues. It also reclassifies upwards two positions that have been paid work out of class, and it provides additional expenditure limitation for the cost of conducting license examinations. 61% of the budget is personal services, 38% is services and supplies, and 1% is capital outlay. So how was the budget developed? The starting point was the 01-03 legislatively adopted budget, which consists of $888,913 other funds. There was a base budget adjustment of $98,519 other funds for the cost of position actions and compensation changes in 2001-2003. And then we have a number of essential packages. Package 01 provides standard inflationary increases for differential and mass transit taxes. This is an increase of $367 other funds. Package 030 provides standard adjustments for inflation and state government service charges. This is an increase of $19,371 other funds. And the agency is housed in a non-state-owned building at the Morrow Building, just as the Thank Board you. Of Accountancy. So. There are a number of policy packages. Package 070 is the package where we reduce the agency's budget by $149,067 other funds and one permanent full-time investigator, one position, because of a projected decrease in revenues. Package 102, it provides additional funding to pay for licensing examination costs. This is an increase of $22,855 other funds. Then there are two other packages which reclassify one, an examination and education coordinator position and a senior investigator position. These are based on a review of the positions by the Department of Administrative Services, Human Resource Services Division, as well as the Department of Administrative Services coming up with a new classification, the Compliance Specialist 2 classification. And the budget does not provide any additional expenditure limitation for these two reclassifications.
Are these reclassifications up, down?
These reclassifications are up. The examination and education coordinator position, it is a reclassification upwards from salary range 19 to salary range 21.
Okay, and the same category then?
It's a two-step increase. And the senior investigator is an upward reclassification from a salary range 21 to a salary range 25. This is because of a new classification that Department of Administrative Services came up with, the Compliance Specialist 2. And you'll be seeing this reclassification with a number of other similar positions in other agencies.
I see. Other questions of Mr. Upadhyay? Okay, with that, do we want to go to Joyce first? Joyce, are you the chair of the board? Joyce Punkhauser, the chair of the State Board of Tax Practitioners. And Joyce, can you give us your presentation on about a 30,000-foot level, please?
Well, I think mainly what we were trying to do with our budget was to cut some costs. And I think what we really dwelt on was eliminating or being more cost conscious with a lot of the legislative costs, and that we were also trying to involve some of our licensees more, like with our ad hoc committee on our rules changes. We were trying to get more people involved that would help out with that. We're also evaluating our new position that we'll be hiring our executive director's position to see if we want to go with a C or a D, evaluating exactly where that comes out at.
Joyce, your response, this is something that is of concern to me, your response relative to projected decrease in revenues in the current biennium, what is the phenomenon that's happening over there?
As far as decrease in revenues?
Right. Why don't we just go ahead and have Ron introduce himself for the record. And Ron, you're the executive director or interim executive director?
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Ron Burson, and I'm the interim director for the Board of Tax Practitioners. The board, it's not necessarily the board sees a decrease in our projected revenues. It's that maybe the projected revenues in previous sessions might have been a little bit higher. The industry is doing well. I think we've done well to bring people into the industry. Our license fees, of course, are going to be exactly the same. We're not asking for any increases this biennium. But we've tried to be very conservative in our projections on our revenues, as opposed to maybe in the past we've been a little bit, not so conservative, I should say.
Satish, excuse me just a moment, Ron. Satish, do you have that, I'm sorry, and you're probably, do you have the 48-month cash balance analysis for us? I've been asking for those for a number of different departments. Do you have that, a 48-month ending balance?
Mr. Chair, I don't have that here, but we can get that for you.
Can I have that? That's always helpful. Representative Johnson's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sensing a disconnect, and I need your help to try to get myself hooked back up again. You're forecasting your revenues more conservatively. By your testimony, you're talking about reducing costs. And yet, is all I see in here is reclasses up, analyzing whether or not your exec is going to come in at a principal exec D or E, or was it?
C or D.
So I see revenue projections down or static, expenses up. At some point, you're going to have a catastrophe. To help me understand that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think once we go through our full presentation, you'll get an idea of what the agency is trying to do overall. The presentation that Satish has given you has just showed the reclassifications up. We did have a position that also reclassed down. It went from a 19 to a 17. And again, I think Joyce talked about the executive director, what we're going to bring that in as. But there's many expenses throughout the agency. We talked a little bit, or Satish talked a little bit about it on our services and supplies that we believe in the past were spent at maybe a higher level than they needed to be. And we have tried to corral those costs in while still serving the public.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my bill is up, so if you'll excuse me, I'll be right back.
Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. Okay, further questions? Please continue. Unless you're done, Joyce, and I'm going to turn it over to Ron.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and turn it over to Ron?
Okay, and you'll wrap it up. Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The mission of the Board of Tax Practitioners is to protect the consumers by ensuring that Oregon tax practitioners are competent and ethical in their professional activities. Currently, the Board is renewing its goals, and all of these goals are relating directly to our performance measures. The goals concentrate on education and consumer protection, the two main goals of the Board. The Board of Tax Practitioners is divided into four distinct areas: administration, licensing, education, and compliance. The administrator's position and duties relate to the mission and goals by managing the board's resources to accomplish the board's mission and goals. The board has recognized the importance of the role of the administrator in accomplishing this. The administrator is responsible for coordinating the agency's activities and accomplish the mission and goals. Licensing is responsible for maintenance. I'm sorry, I'm on page two now. Licensing is responsible for maintenance of the licensing database. The agency has its own database, and this position maintains that. Renewing licenses, issuing new licenses, and banking the money. And I was pointed out by Joyce today, I might have mistook there on banking the money. We actually go through a lockbox program, but they actually bring the money in and know how much money we're bringing in and balance with the Department of Administrative Services each month. That's what I meant by that. The education position or department program is responsible for the board's testing and continuing education program. This position coordinates the statewide testing programs and works with the board's consultants to devise tests each year to include the year's new tax law. They're also responsible for grading all tests received by the board. Compliance is responsible for ensuring the board's licenses are adhering to the board's laws and rules. This position also responds to complaints of unlicensed activity throughout the state. This position is responsible for protecting the consumers from poor tax preparation practices. It is the compliance specialist's duty to perform this function in the most cost-effective manner possible. The board wants this position to solve this problem for the least cost with the most effective result for protecting the consumers. An agency-wide overview of performance measures. The board's performance measures, and I've included those back here. It's actually being handout one. Back on page 13, the board's performance measures are aligned with the board's missions. The board identified four distinct performance measures, two around education and licensing, and two around compliance. The two education measures are the number of practitioner assisted returns per licensed practitioner. In the state of Oregon, tax preparation business is growing by leaps and bounds. The Department of Revenue now is up to about 1.6 million returns in the state of Oregon. And this last year, just about 50% of those accounted for paid practitioners. This also includes certified public accountants in that number. So as the tax laws and as the economy got good, people needed the tax practitioners to explain to them how they made their money and how they can pay the right amount of tax on the money that they made. As times got bad, they need a professional tax preparer to explain, how do I get rid of my losses, or how do I deal with my losses on my tax returns. And so we found a real growth in the industry there. So what we want to do is we want to ensure that there's enough paid tax preparers in this performance measure to be able to accommodate the needs of the people of the state of Oregon.
Representative Patrick, excuse me, Ron.
I don't know. I think we're kind of jumping around here in the report. No, it's fine. And my question is, how many complaints do you get for your practitioner based upon the number of returns that are filed?
We have some budget notes later on in the.
Why don't you jump right to those right now, okay. Ron, rather than continuing on with the reading.
All right. There's a compliance report on page 36. That I tried to put together for us.
Okay.
And
I'm looking in your book. So
okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. You're fine.
Anyway, on page 36, I think it was Ways and Means that asked us to produce a compliance report for you folks. You asked about the number of complaints against licensees. I'm sorry it's not a direct number in here, but you can kind of take the total amount of complaints and take out the unlicensed folks. We just lump them into one. So the return of records, advertising, competency in services, and unsupervised, and then others, those are all against licensed tax consultants or tax preparers. as you can see, really a lot of our complaints are on unlicensed people coming in the state during a short period of time during tax season to take advantage of that situation.
So how many, so what's the number of tax repairers in 2000, 2001, 2002?
Currently, we have about 5,400 licensees in our system. Some of those licensees are in lab status. That means that they have not renewed, but they are still eligible to renew. So if you stay lapsed for over 3 years, you pretty much have to start over again.
What's the history there, Ron? Has it gone from what to 5,400?
It's stayed pretty flat since I've been with the board. I came in 2000, and this is really one of my personal goals, is to try to increase. I think we've concentrated on increasing the number of preparers because the industry has asked for that because they couldn't hire enough good preparers, the consultants. I guess I should go back and maybe explain that there's two levels of licensure here. There's a licensed tax preparer, which is like an apprentice, and there's a licensed tax consultant. As a preparer, you have to work for a consultant or a certified public accountant. The industry in the past, when the economy was very good, the industry had yelled and screamed and asked us to produce more preparers, and I think that the board concentrated on that. My goal is to have those same people transfer or promote up to the consultant and become part of the industry.
Do you have...
Senator, Senator, go ahead.
I'm still back on my hour.
We'll award that hour to you during this time.
Do you have, how many preparers do you have, and then how many consultants do you have?
2,200 consultants, 1,800 preparers, 1,500 businesses. Is that right? That's according to the governor's write-up.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So 2,200, 1,800, that'd be 4,000 that are out doing tax returns, and then 1,500 tax businesses. What constitutes a tax business, Ron? Somebody with a name?
Chair Butler, a tax business, if you are a consultant and you are the owner of the business, you need to register that business with the Board of Tax Records.
So in addition to being a consultant, I've got to register it as a name.
Register your business name, yes.
So you have the business, and the person is probably also a consultant?
The majority of the time, yes.
Is there some way, because that's... I'm trying to get these numbers.
Go ahead.
Is there some way that you can distinguish in your numbering so you know how much activity that you're really having? You have the business, and where that business is also the consultant. Do they pay an additional fee to be the business as well as the consultant?
Chair Butler, Senator Winters, there is a business registration fee.
Okay.
But the number that I gave you, the 5,400. That also includes lapsed licenses, which is not part of...
I need a 101 course.
Okay.
Okay. So I have a business, and what does the business pay?
So I have to do our own this year.
50?
And the software is available.
70.
In your budget?
Business registration.
So the business pays
$95. The reason I stall, and I apologize for that, is there's a combined fee that comes in, and there's a discount if you do it all at the same time.
Okay, so combined fee is what's the combined fee?
For the business and
consultant.
I'm going to refer to the chair.
I think I wrote the check for $145. Yeah, I think it was like 70 and no, maybe it was 125. 70 and 45. If I put them both together.
So if I've got a tax consultant's license, if it's Jackie Winter's tax consultant, then I'm going to pay for a tax consultant's license. I'm going to pay for a business fee.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
If I have people working under me, they're going to pay for.
They're going to pay for their own.
Right.
But when Jackie Winter's tax consulting sets up, she's going to pay for Jackie Winters, and she's going to pay for Jackie Winters' tax consultant, and there's a discounted fee for those two.
And that's approximately, or that is?
125.
125 or 145?
No, 125 for both. It's like 70 and...
Is it 45? Well, your business license is 95.
That's if you get it separately. For the
okay. So the combined business and the tax and the consultant license... So you're charging $30 for the consultant license.
Those are biennial fees, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Chair Butler.
Go ahead, Ron.
That is a yearly fee.
Oh, these are annual fees.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
it's
okay.
Mr. Chair?
Please, Senator.
How much do you have in reserve?
This plan, currently, I'm sorry, Chair Butler, Senator Winters, currently this is the low point for the Board of Tax Practitioners. It's right before their renewal, which happens to be due on May 31st. So currently right now we don't have anything in reserves. At the end of the biennium, at the end of June, I have projected us to have approximately $70,000 in reserves at that point.
If I may, Mr. Dallas, please go ahead. I should point out that during this biennium, there was the Board of Tax Practitioners had to borrow short-term from the Treasury, so they do not have much in the way of cash reserves at all. That was reviewed and approved by both the Department of Administrative Services and LFO. Treasury contacted us, and that was, I believe, a $60,000 or $90,000 loan.
Mr. Chair, is this the first time that they had to borrow?
I've never heard of it.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Satish?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, this board has had revenue problems dating back to 1997, 99 biennium. This was due to licensing volume not meeting up to expectations, as well as the fees are in statute, so the fees not being high enough. During the 99-01 biennium, the board started reducing their expenses, and it was last biennium that their fees got increased. So now they are in a much better position, and the agency did get a loan from Treasury, which has been paid back.
Representative Patridge, let's go ahead. Representative Patridge.
My concern with the projections, though, is, I mean, I heard some news report that said, like, H&R Block is down, like, 50% in terms of filing through them, and that, you know, and I know the advent of computer software, filing software continues to rapidly penetrate the market. I think the CPAs probably have felt pinches there, as well as the tax preparers. I'm just concerned that your number of licenses and your license fee amount will continue to keep pace with electronic advents in the market as well. I mean, I don't know why H&R Blocks is down, but that was the national. I think it was said like 50% nationally or something.
Go ahead, Ron.
Representative Patridge, at this time right now, it's pretty difficult to tell whether they're up or. I mean, they could be down at this point in the tax season, but really we don't really want to look at the final numbers until tax season ends, because people could be putting off here until the 15th of April because or be asking for extensions because maybe this is a year that they do owe money. But we've always felt in our industry, just like in certified public accountants, that people don't pay these practitioners for their software. They pay for their knowledge of the tax law, and it's their knowledge of the software. So we haven't really found a large influence by being able to buy TurboTax, say, at Costco, that has kept their businesses down. And you can speak for that.
Yeah,
the service is offering software directly. I mean, you don't have to pay anything
for it.
Yeah,
you just go online.
Haven't noticed mine go down a bit this year.
Let me ask this, and there are several questions here, but if I take the numbers that are given in the LFO analysis times the rates without any discounts, $2,200 at $65, $1,800 at $75, and $1,500 at $95, which I believe probably is already covered through the Secretary of State's office. You have to buy another license for the Secretary of State's office in order to have an assumed business name, as I recall. So that appears to be a duplication of a license fee. But I come up, if I take those all at gross amounts, $420,000 per annum times two, that's $840,000. You folks are going to fall short again. At $880,000 requested, we're not going to make it, folks. Ron?
Representative Bubber, those fees, and I'm glad that you added those up, but there's also other fees or other monies that come into the board. An example is that part of our budget is also our testing fees, and even those testing fees, the majority of that is a pass-through fee to the community colleges. It is part of our budget.
How much is that? Mr. Chair.
Senator Winter, please.
How much is that?
How much is it to test?
To test.
Yeah. What's your revenue projection? How much is it to test, and how much is your revenue projection?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, the total revenue projection for 2003-2005 is $927,868, and we are projecting 4 months of ending balance at this point, and the total expenditures are $880,958.
That's for testing?
No, that's not the testing.
No.
This is
that
overall
includes
budget.
Everything.
That's included.
She would like to know
I'd
the separation.
Like know
do you
the
have
separation.
A segregation of that, Satish?
We do not have it here, Mr. Chair. We will provide that for you.
Well, our analyst has.
Do the fines go to the back to the board? There's fines of anywhere from, looks like some years as high as $30,000 or $40,000. Do the fines go back to the board or do they go to general fund?
Mr. Chair, the fines go back to the board, and that's one way their financial situation has improved slightly because they've accommodated more or used more aggressive fines.
I sure hate to see that as a revenue maker, though. That, I sure don't like to see try to balance the budget by going out and levying fines, because even though one-fourth of the thrust is in compliance, education, licensing, and administration go down the toilet while we were rushing out trying to balance our budget. Senator, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, I did. There's $45,000 in pass-through for the community colleges. And I still would like to go back to my original question.
Please, Senator.
One, how much is the testing fee? And what is totally that you receive from the community college, from the testing, and then what goes to the community college and what stays into your revenue? Into your revenue. Does the $45,000 stay into your revenue, or is that passed through to the community colleges?
Chair Butler, Senator Winters. The $45,000 comes into the board, and the board pays that out as an expense.
Okay. So then, if that's an expense item, how much are you collecting for the testing fee?
Chair Butler, Senator Winters. Okay, community colleges vary in their charges to the students. The highest fee out there is $25 to proctor the exam. Some of them are only $20 to proctor the exam. I think, if I remember right, one is trying to raise their fee up to $30 to proctor the exam.
Let me just ask a couple of questions. Representative Johnson, in our last opportunity to review this budget, asked a number of questions regarding your senior citizen's license, your grandfather's licenses. Can you kind of give us an update? I noticed that you have some summary and then some detailed information on those grandfather's licenses. What's happening amongst that group of folks, active, lapsed, retired, and deceased?
Chair Butler.
I think the summary is on page 17 of the handout. Is this, for instance, amongst the active, 210 active licenses, 51 with complaints? That looks like a fairly high complaint level. Is that standard through your industry?
No, it is not, Chair Butler. And these complaints could go back several years. We tried to give you a complete history.
Oh, I see. This
whether they've ever had a complaint.
Oh, okay.
These folks have also been in the industry. They could have been back to 1977. So, whereas a grandfather person has been around a long time, and I also want to point out maybe how complaints were counted back then also. If you also look at the number of violations, it's really down to two, so it's a very small percentage of violations.
Mr. Chair.
Senator, Representative Johnson.
Out of this, I hate grandfathered anythings.
You don't like your pilots being grandfathered, huh?
Yeah, you know, back before we had licenses, so it's okay to keep doing it. I presume that when the 141 in the lapsed category fell into lapsed, that's an opportunity for you to take them out of grandfathered status?
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, yes. If they stay lapsed over 3 years, then they would have to come back in as a preparer, and they'd have to test. They'd have to test for competency and to start all over again.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please, yes.
Three seems awfully generous in a grandfathered environment. What's the board rationale for allowing such a generous period of lapse if the idea is to clean up these grandfathered permits and get everybody up into a current testing regime?
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, I'm happy that you asked that question because this is actually a current discussion by the board and the amount of time. And it's not just for grandfather, but for anybody to lapse within the industry. Now, I understand that even currently, though, they have 3 years to lapse, but they also have to provide us with 3 years' worth of continuing education before they can come back. So if you let somebody go just before 3 years, they'd have to provide us with 90 hours of community or continuing education. So the board is currently discussing lowering the amount of time that somebody can lapse.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please,
this is just a comment. Given that you're going to have an ongoing relationship with the legislature, it would be at least this legislator's recommendation that 3 years is awfully generous, even with the 90 hours of community service. And if, in fact, as your mission says, you're talking about making sure that you've got competent and ethical folks in your professional activities, having this giant pool of grandfathered people, I think the board would want to exercise every opportunity to bring those people within the fold of your current testing regime and your current oversight and not have this big pool of lapsed people, or not lapsed, but grandfathered.
Thank you.
Senator Winters?
Mr. Chair, I have to share the concerns and the comment by my good colleague over.
Your good colleague.
My
made
good
that
colleague
major,
over on the other side.
Major issue of understanding with the
because,
board.
Because, you know, in my industry, we can't lapse a year.
Well, and I think that's where she was coming from. You know, I mean, how long do you want your helicopter pilots running on a granddad license? I mean, particularly if they're lapsed for 3 years, and you know, with no ongoing testing. Of course, we're not dealing with people's lives; we're dealing with their finances, which ultimately is their lives. So,
actually, Mr. Chair, that really is dealing with their lives. Fiduciary responsibility is dealing with individuals' lives.
One follow-up, Ron, in that regard. We'd asked last time, too, California was in the process of phasing in a greater oversight over those folks that were in the tax preparation industry. I understand that that's now pretty much the norm in California, that they do have some oversight. Have other states formally adopted programs of this kind of oversight at this point?
Chair Butler, not at this time. I included in a budget note a comparison with here in the state of Oregon with the state of California. But currently at this time, the Internal Revenue Service has been contacting the Board of Tax Practitioners, having us be involved, and they're looking at a national licensing program. But I have been contacted by several states, but at this time nobody has gone forward with it. And I'm sorry to back up just a bit, too.
Go ahead.
I don't know if I ever answered Senator Winter's question on how much the testing fee was, and it is $65.
And that's a one-time testing fee if they pass the exam at that point. Is that right?
That's correct.
And after that, as long as they continue on with their continuing education, then they just re-up annually. Did we talk about biennial licensure last time when we met?
Chair Butler, I guess I'm at a bit of a disadvantage. I wasn't in the room at that time, so
was it in our records last time, Satish, that we talked about biennial licensure?
Mr. Chair, I wasn't here last time. I don't see anything in the records.
Everybody's new here except Dallas.
Me too. We had this with a rotation analyst last session. So,
but Mr. Chair, we will look at it and get back to you.
Yeah. Okay, if you would please, Satish.
Excuse me. So, if I may,
go ahead, Dallas.
Is the licensing schedule set in statute so that if we went to biennial licensing, we would require a change of statute?
Sounds like we'd have to if it's in statute.
Yes. Sure, Father. In fact, this last biennium, the board put a bill through clarifying when the renewal dates were because there was some confusion between the rule and the statute. They were conflicting. That Senate Bill 147 has been signed by both the House and the Senate and by the governor. So it is in statute that they are renewed on the consultant renewed by May 31st of each year, the preparers by September 30th.
I know this is one of the violations that were examined amongst some of those senior licensees had to do with payroll returns. The payroll returns are not covered by this, are they, by the licensure?
Chair Butler, and that's again one of my concerns in the past. If we go back to my compliance report, which was part of those budget notes, the number of violations you see are actually falling. And that doesn't mean that we're having less contact in the office. It's just that I believe in the past that they were counting just about everything as a complaint or a violation, even though it might have been outside of our statute.
So you're only including those things within the scope of the statute at this point?
My goal is that we are only going to count complaints that this board has authority to look into. And if you folks haven't given us any authority in that area, then we shouldn't either.
And let's see. We were also talking about what constitutes a tax return, I think, last time as well. Individual, corporate, LLC, those kinds of things are all within the scope of tax return, not just individuals. So fiduciary.
I'm sorry, Chair Butler. I believe our statute alludes to personal income tax returns.
Strictly personal, not business returns.
No, sir.
Okay. Okay. And then... Dallas, do we have a 10% on this? I recognize there's no general fund, but is there a 10% under 3182?
I believe it was submitted as part of the budget process.
Where is that? Is that perhaps in the book? Satish, the 3182, is it?
It is supposed to be in page 41 of the governor's budget binder.
Yeah.
Take me through that quickly, if you would, Satish. Where was the first 10% cut?
The first 10% of the cut, Mr. Chair, all of Adam have been prepared to discuss it over here. I will just go through this. It's maintaining competency examinations and continuing education for licensees. The board would have to do away with its exam and education programs. And
the heart of the program, isn't it?
That's part of the program.
Not part, it's the heart.
It's the heart of the program.
Okay, so the first thing they would cut would be the heart of the program.
Yes, and that would be $112,000. And the second would be, they would be reducing consumer protection and compliance enforcement. Basically, Mr. Chair, this agency has a very small budget. They've had financial difficulties since 1999. They have been going through, reduction of expenditures. If you look at their services and supplies expenditures, the governor's budget reduces it by 17%. Okay. If I am allowed to use the term that we aren't supposed to use right now, from the current service level. And also, they have been doing other things like the director's position has been vacant, and they are saving around $6,000 a month because of that. Ron is the acting director. Now the board is also looking at further cutting down expenditures by maybe reducing this position downward, reclassifying this position downwards. And we have this one position that has been eliminated in the governor's budget. It's an investigator one position that saves around $147,000.
So you won't do investigations of payroll tax returns and corporate returns, which we don't have
This position was for bilingual.
It was for an extern
bilingual investigator.
I'm interested. I noticed that the attempt was to hire a bilingual. How many bilingual preparers do we have?
The board would have to answer that.
Chair Butler, I don't have the exact number. I could try to get that number, but again, as with the Board of Accountancy, we don't ask that question. But one thing through this hiring that we did recognize with trying to hire, because we did attempt to hire a Spanish-speaking investigator, and because we recognized there was some problems in the Hispanic community with unlicensed people taking advantage of the Spanish-speaking population. And we were unable to do that. We didn't get enough candidates. And one time we did get enough candidates, and we actually interviewed for the position, and the one person that we thought came closest to filling that position, when we checked their driving record, we couldn't allow them in a state vehicle. So they would have a hard time doing the position. But one thing that we did find is that we found that there is a need. Instead of attacking it from our end as the board, why don't we get more people licensed that are Spanish speaking? And currently right now, the associations, and I know of several actual consultants out there that are mentoring people to get them into the position, and actually in some cases even paying their fees for their education and their and then, of course, giving them a job afterwards. So we recognize we need to bring more people in. We don't ask that question on our application on a race question on their application. It would be difficult for me to give you an exact number.
But when you advertise for, oh, I see, for the licensees, you don't ask them if they're Hispanic. Then
no, when they renew, we don't ask them.
But you could ask them if they're Spanish speaking.
Yeah, for a licensee, you could ask them if they were Spanish-speaking.
Or if they had
multiple language skills.
What we have done is we had a joint project with the Department of Revenue, and that the Department of Revenue have asked us to provide them with a list of Spanish-speaking practitioners out there. And we have we polled our constituents out there and asked them to inform us of their skills. And we took that list and we provided it to the department.
How many were on that list, Ron?
You know, I don't have the exact number there.
100, 200?
No, it was under that.
Okay.
And again, that's not to say that there wasn't more people. These were people that were willing to volunteer to be recognized by the Department of Revenue, because the Department of Revenue, if they found a Spanish-speaking citizen out there that needed help.
Oh, I see.
Then they could say, here's a person that speaks Spanish. If you're more comfortable sitting down.
Specifically Spanish, they ask for or
no,
or
they
any
ask
language,
for any kind of language skills.
Okay.
I just used the Spanish.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Example. That's fine. Ron, I'm going to say this. And I may be probably out of line saying it, but you appear to have a much more wholesome attitude about the department than we've experienced in the past, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
That's very refreshing to me, because it always appeared to be very confrontational in the past, and I'm glad that you're approaching this from a can-do, will-do kind of an attitude. But I guess I would express my angst that we continue. That we continue not to have nationwide buy-in. And every time I talk about this, I get flooded with emails, so I need to be careful. But if this is such a good program nationwide, the Department or the Internal Revenue Service would like to go ahead and have some sort of licensure or have some sort of competency for those folks who are selling their services. I've got to believe that nationwide, that this problem will be solved nationwide before we're going to solve it in the state of Oregon. I recognize that we have a method to try and solve it in the state of Oregon at a cost of about $1 million to taxpayers, but no one has bought this model for whatever reason. And I'm not sure how much differently the California model is actually chiseled out in their statute. Do you know by any chance?
Yes, our Chair Butler, first of all, the California model, it is not a licensure, it's actually a registration. And you're required to do 20 hours of continuing education each year to keep that. There is no testing for competence to begin with. You're just registered as a tax preparer in the state.
Ron, what's your, and I appreciate that, what's your take over the fact that I've got a business licensure for a registration for tax businesses, and those folks have still some obligation to take a business registration fee down to the Secretary of State's office for an assumed business name? Does that grind on anybody?
Well, I'm sorry, Chair Butler. I've never been in favor of making it difficult for businesses to do much of anything in this state. In fact, my background is from the Department of Revenue, and when I was with the Department of Revenue, I was all for when we took the withholding tax forms and we made it into one form. We put employment, we put everybody else on there, TriMet, Lane Transit District, Workers' Comp on one form for people to have one form.
Are you online?
We are online.
I can fill out the form online and
you know, assuming... You can download the form online.
Okay. So it's not interactive, but I can download it and then...
We haven't quite had the, had the expertise to get that handled just yet. But right now, that business registration, which I hear some concern for, that is also the person that is responsible for all the returns going out of that office. It allows that person... gains in that responsibility. There is, it isn't just a license fee. It's also an ability for them to operate a tax preparation business in the state of Oregon.
So
they have responsibility for all the returns, even if it's one of their employees.
But their employee has to be their tax consultant or a tax preparer, do they not?
Yes, they do. They do have to be. But there is a designated consultant for each business, and that designated consultant holds the responsibility, as does the preparer, too, but the ultimate responsibility that every return that goes out of that office is done well or done
is,
well.
Is that model the same as we use with real estate licenses? Because there we have a, what's called a designated broker. And when you're a salesperson or you're a broker, and a broker is either a broker or a designated broker, and do we have another licensing level? I don't know. Perhaps one of my colleagues does know. Do you know, Ron?
Sure, Robert, I do not know. I would like to go back to talk about, you had mentioned the Internal Revenue Service, and ironically, here at the beginning of April, they will be testifying to a national licensing program before Congress, and they have asked me to provide them with substantial information to help that testimony.
Any advocacy panel? Yeah, I think in the past, are you going back to Washington?
No, sir.
Okay, I think in the past we've testified or the information has been that Oregon has a very decent rate of compliance nationwide as a result of this program. Whether or not it's worth $1 million extra to the folks in the state of Oregon, I don't know. Is that still the case, Ron?
Chair Butler, that question was asked, I believe, the last time, and I tried to actually get solid numbers on what the error rate was, Oregon compared to other states as far as nationwide goes, and I was unable to do that.
So H&R Block in Oregon versus H&R Block in Idaho or California, we don't have a rate of error.
I did come up with a rate of error for us here in the state of Oregon compared to the state of California, which is the closest to us. And it's in a budget note back
okay.
Before I talk.
Representative Patrick has a comment. No, I was just going to ask if we were able to get a rate of comparison versus other states, so in terms of compliance.
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, I apologize for not having better comparisons, but again, with other states not keeping track of this stuff, it's very difficult for us to come up with numbers. But again, California does, and of course they have a much larger rate. I'm sorry, this is on page 29, much larger rate of returns going through. But even with just their no testing for competence, and simply making the people do 20 hours of continuing education around taxes, it dropped their error percentage down from 22% down to 17%.
But they didn't have that program in existence in 2000, did they, Ron?
These were their numbers, so I believe that they did, sir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's just self-prepared versus practitioner-prepared. Practitioner could be a CPA or an attorney, couldn't it?
Exactly, yes. Okay. And that is the same with the state of Oregon. And as far as our cost of $1 million, the one thing that this agency can do to help with the general fund is what's happening in the first two boxes up above. Is we have dropped the number of errors or the error rate down 2003 and 2002 from 7.27%, which are self-prepared returns, down to 2.16. Again, this includes certified public accountants and attorneys that are practicing to do taxes.
So really, Director Harchenko's shop ought to be doing, ought to be able to do more with less in her department because of the great success you folks are enjoying now.
Chair Butler, I would not testify.
Representative Patridge is recognized, and then Representative Johnson.
Do we know what our error rate, though, was before?
Before the licensing?
Before the licensing happened, and then now?
You know, Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, it was clear back in the early 70s, and I don't have those numbers. I'm sorry, sir. I could ask.
Okay. And so state to state, they don't keep error percentages? Like the IRS doesn't say X many from this state or have errors?
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, I could not give any numbers from the Internal Revenue Service on how many errors are coming out of each state.
Representative Johnson?
I'm just perusing my old favorite area, the grandfathered permits, and looking at, starting on page 18, looking at your active grandfathered folks and some of the reasons, I mean, return of records closed, no response from client, negligence, incompetence, no authority. Why would you not have authority? I am looking on the top of page 20 at number 0445. It's about the fifth one down.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson.
I mean, I want to go up to 30,000 feet again, not the specifics of this case, but why would you have no authority over a grandfathered person who's doing things that result in allegations of negligence and incompetence?
It's very difficult for me to answer this, but we would not. We would have authority over that. Current administration here, this is something that would be looked at very seriously. The return of records is that happens a lot of times. People, if they don't get their records and they make a phone call and we get their records back from them. We would close that a lot of times because the consumer got their records back. But this negligence and incompetence, this is something that we would put an investigation into, look at specific allegations, interview the parties, and find out, again, without the specifics, maybe that's what they found out, that there wasn't anything there.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, please.
A lot of these have that kind of fee dispute, no authority. There are other instances where there's no authority, and I'm just trying to figure out that if the goal of the whole agency is to provide a standard of ethics and competency, why it is that you would have no authority asserted over part of your universe. And I'm curious about that and would welcome an answer for the benefit of the whole committee. The other thing is that I want to point out to you on page 28, you've got one of the best typos that I've seen while I've been in the legislature. You unfortunately have two diseased practitioners. I'm going to assume that means deceased. They could be deceased and diseased, but that's going to hold the highlight for typos.
You got to give them an E for effort. It was spelled without a C consistently everywhere in the presentations. Senator Devlin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to clarification on something. It was mentioned that, and I'm surmising from this, that attorneys and CPAs are exempt. Is that correct?
Chair Butler, Senator Devlin, from our statutes, yes. Public accountants also.
Follow up?
Senator?
Yes. And does the IRS still have enrolled agents, and would they be exempt?
Chair Butler, Senator Devlin, enrolled agents are recognized by the board, and they have tested their competence to the federal tax programs. All we ask them to do is to test. It's a 40-question test on our state taxes, And when they pass that exam, they become licensed tax consultants. They do not have to go through the preparer.
So an EA, an enrolled agent, then has to have a licensed tax consulting permit as well in Oregon?
Sure, brother, that is correct.
I've never heard of that.
Thank you.
Okay. So someone who holds a federal license has got to come back then and test out for Oregon, basically.
Care about it. They just come in and just test on that. They don't do the entire exam.
Right, but they test out, and then they have to have a state license at that point in addition to the federal license.
And according to the, what was it, their association, that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. As I think of that, there's nowhere at a state level that EA, enrolled agents, are ever really examined other than just right there. So that probably gives you the oversight to make sure, because once they're an enrolled agent, once they pay their annual fees for their enrolled agent's license, then I don't know what testing is required. So that's interesting. That's an interesting comment, Senator. Do you follow up?
No follow up, Mr. Chairman. During a former life, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I should admit this.
Uh-oh.
As a graduate student, I was an Office of Collections representative for the Internal Revenue Service, which is a glorified telephone collector.
And did you get an enrolled agent's license at
no,
that point?
No, I didn't. I thought about it, but I...
That's great. That's great. Yes, Ron, please.
Chair Butler, I'd like to just elaborate a little bit more on the enrolled agents wanting to be licensed tax consultants also. Currently, this session, the enrolled agents have a bill in to try to be recognized by the Department of Revenue to be able to represent their clients in front of them, because currently they are not. Licensed tax consultants are. So that's just one example of where an enrolled agent maybe isn't recognized here in the state of Oregon, and they like having the licensed tax consultant designation.
But they do have legislation amongst the enrolled agents to attempt to gain a status of a consultant, tax consultant, without the tax consultants.
No, they're simply trying to be able to step in front of the Department of Revenue and represent their clients. Which licensed tax consultants can do.
Okay.
Step in front of the Department of Revenue and represent them in front of hearings. Mm-hmm. Under contested tax.
Yeah. Further questions of Ron or Joyce? I guess in these difficult financial times, this is a good time to go back and examine the questions that the Senator sent us. And I'm sure that members of the Senate have seen the list, and that is, if it didn't already exist, would we implement it? And I don't know, in these difficult times, whether or not that would be something that we would raise our hands and say, yeah, we need to create a new level of compliance. But I've had my own set of bills in before to try and address this issue, and have backed way off when I saw the department back off, when the board itself backed away from business returns and some other kinds of things. So, and the licensure within accounting offices, those folks that handed CPA in CPA offices or law offices and handed tax returns out, the proposal was that anybody that touched a tax return to deliver it and try and explain it was going to have to be licensed by you folks. And now I assume that no longer is on the table, is it? So, okay. Further questions? Dallas, we're going to go ahead and turn some time over to you and let you take us through from legislative fiscal where we're at. And then I would like to have that 24-month walk through the, and particularly in light of the fact that we've had deficiency and we had to borrow our way out of that. What was the interest rate on the borrowing? Do you remember, Satish?
Mr. Chair, the interest rate is from the Treasury and it's minimal amount.
Yeah, it's pooled rate, so it's a very small amount. So.
And Mr. Chair, do you want 24 months or 48 months?
48 months, I beg your pardon, historical and current, current biennial.
And Mr. Chair, what we'll provide you is the 48 months ending balance. We'd also like to provide you with a fee schedule. I think that's the interest here.
Please, so that we can extend that out and find out where those are coming from. And as long as no one has any angst over the fees or fines being levied to support the department, that always gives me just a little chill, particularly when we've got a kind of a fine line here. And then also recognize the 3182 reductions come immediately from the heart of the operations. I'm not terribly excited about that. It seems like there could be some administrative efficiencies before you take away the competency examinations and maintain the competency within the field. But, you know, I also recognize that if it's a very lean operation, you might have to start to take away some of the direct meat of the operation, too. So,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in fact, the agency has reduced, you know, actually more than the 10% because of the bringing in line the revenues with their expenditures and a reduction of the one FTE. Legislative Fiscal is comfortable with the budget that's come forward. There will be some adjustments that we would propose to make, as with all other agencies, and that is the implementation of the wage and COLA freeze. As with other agencies, the co-chairs have said the bigger agencies, there's no provision for the inflation, so we take that back down. We don't have any other, at this juncture, proposed adjustments to the budget other than the wage freeze, the inflation. That was your proposed, the reductions of
the reclasses.
The reclasses were offset internally. This is the preferred way where they didn't ask, they're not asking for any increase in their limitation. They were absorbing those costs, personnel actions, otherwise the reduction in the loss of an FTE. So they followed the rules that general fund agencies have to follow with respect to what's that called, self-funding or
Mr. Chair, if I may elaborate on that. Yes, we have two reclasses, but we also, there's a position that has been reduced. There's $141,000 reduction as a result of a position reduction, as well as reduction in services and supplies. And for these reclasses, no additional expenditure limitation is being provided for them.
Representative Johnson?
There's still something that bothers me about this. You've got an agency that ended up borrowing to make it through. I know that you're absorbing this limitation internally this time. But what happens next time? It seems to me you increased expenses. You're ostensibly using up internal assets to fund these reclasses upwards. That comes to an end at some point. You can't, I mean, you'll have nothing else to give up when the expenses catch up with you. It just, I'm trying to figure out long-term prudent whether or not this is a wise thing or I'm projecting ahead 2 years from now. We're sitting here at the next session having this conversation, and now you've got higher expenses than revenues, and where does it end?
Is that rhetorical, representing?
Actually, I'm looking for an answer.
You know, Senator Johnson, I think that's why we've reviewed this reclassifying or going back and reviewing whether we want to hire the new executive directors, a D or a C, because doing a C would save us money. And I think that's where it was evaluated back in 1990. And somehow along the line, there's been pay line exceptions, and it got raised to a D. So right now we're in the process of reevaluating that, and that would be cost saving.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, 15.
I don't know how many times in my brief legislative career I've heard that. Somehow it got reclassified up. And until we stop the bracket creep that continues inside all of these agencies, it just goes up and up and up. Mr. Chair, a comment that you made caused me to ask what may be a heretical question, but if it didn't exist already, would we implement it? Is there any place else that you could go, given your functions? Have you given that any thought? Is there some place where you could consolidate and cease to exist independently? I know that there are certain professional limitations, or at least I surmise that there are, because I come from a profession that has licensure hierarchies within it, and a certain status attaches to those licensure hierarchies. But I'm just trying to figure out if ostensibly your function is testing, investigation, sanctioning, and that is not dissimilar to the Board of Tax Accountancy. Could you fit in somewhere? I mean, I said tax accountancy, I meant accountancy.
Board of Accountancy.
Could somewhere there be initiated a conversation with accountancy to have a separate piece within their shop that speaks to the issue of tax practitioners? I mean, I'm trying to understand a mindset in this building that says, let's just do more of the same. Yeah. We are in a fiscal crisis that I'm not sure the magnitude of which has really soaked in. And I'm looking especially, with a special interest at those agencies that come in and say, we've thought of a completely different way of doing things, and we think maybe we could eliminate our administrative expenses by finding a home someplace else and taking with us our investigators, our proctors, and we've cut a deal that saves the fee payers, in this case, $500,000. And I'm obviously making this up, the numbers, because I don't know what the savings would be. But has the board ever had that kind of a conversation? Let's put ourselves out of business and take our functions and go put them someplace else.
I think you always have to look at being able to do that. How can I get rid of my job? You know, how can the people of the state of Oregon get the same service for no cost whatsoever?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you have to look at that right now. And have we talked to the Board of Accountancy? We live right next door to them. Do we talk to them on a consistent basis about? And I have conversations with their director, Carol Lewis, about you know, ways of making things better. But maybe even combining. I haven't had that conversation with them.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting concept. I don't know work or not, but it's something to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Representative Johnson, there's one other possibility that I've batted around after the brutal battle that we went through a couple of years ago, talking about where this agency was going and what additional authority they wanted. One of the things that I thought to do was maybe suggest that somewhere within the Department of Revenue, that they set standards that people that are going to sell services to use their income tax returns have a test like they do in California, register, and then a test that they are competent. And then those folks that attest to that level of competency that subscribe affirmatively to that function and then find themselves out of whack, then basically render themselves subject to a greater penalty because they're holding themselves out in the duty that they are something that they are actually not. So either the Department of Revenue or the Board of Accountancy, Oregon Board of Accountancy, could be likely repositories for the registration function as opposed to the testing, licensing, and renewal and registration fees that we have in this particular group.
But that's all they're both doing, Mr. Chair.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And Representative Johnson, I'm basically saying the same thing you are, and that is there a way that either through the Board of Accountancy or the Oregon Department of Revenue, similar to California, let's just register those folks and say you've got to be competent, and you've got to maintain a competency, and you're going to check a little box and say, I prepared this for a fee, and I am competent to have prepared this tax return. And if you subscribe to that and do so errantly without the appropriate education, then you'd be basically, under the terms of false swearing or otherwise, you'd subject yourself to a larger penalty. I mean, you're holding yourself out as a professional. If you don't maintain that degree of professionalism or fail to maintain the continuing education that would be required in statute by anybody who's holding themselves out, that is registered and holds himself out, then at that particular point they're subject to a larger fee, a larger penalty, which would then go back to the general fund as opposed to going on to an agency that funds itself through registration fees, licensure, accounting, or education classes, plus the fees, plus the fines. Representative?
And the mechanism is of less concern to me than the sort of progressive thinking of saying we're duplicative. And I would only just give an example. I ran a state agency for 5 years, and when I arrived, discovered that we were duplicating services already provided by the Office of Emergency Management. And so I gave away a big hunk of our statutory authority and consolidated those activities in a place where it made more sense to consolidate. I know agencies are loath to give away turf and loath to give away jobs, but I think we're at a point right now where voters are telling us there are limits to how much government they want to be subjected to. We can't afford stuff anymore like we used to. And I'm just looking for evidence from agencies that they're looking at ways to do things differently, new models, that perhaps save folks a couple of bucks.
You know, Representative Butler, Representative Johnson, I think that when I look at the Board of Accountancy, because I've, you know, wondered about that myself, but they don't do any testing there. All theirs is handled, what is it, on the national level. So they would have to implement a testing program, too. Their investigation would have to be different. So I can see where some things would fit.
How does their investigation have to be different?
I think you'd almost have to look at both sides of it. They're investigating one thing. They can go into everything with a CPA. We're investigating the individual tax return. So I can see a difference between the two.
Well, if that's a sufficient bar to discussing it, I'll give up. But we just see agency after agency come through saying we want to do more of the same, only more. And it's different out there. We can't do that anymore.
Well, and I think we'd be growing the Board of Accountancy then, too, to accommodate these other 4,000 people.
Representative Patridge, and Senator.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the back of the, in the, basically, I think, in the reports piece. I'm looking at page 76. Dallas, I'm wondering on the flexible benefits and fatigue, is this there's a 20% increase in flexible benefits. Is that as a result of the reclass? I know the PERS issue, and I'm not sure between the two why there's a huge jump there. And I also had a question on the next page, on page 77, about professional services. It's got from 40,000 to 50,000 in this budget cycle.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, and the flexible benefits, this also, you'll see this kind of an increase in almost every agency budget. The main component is the increase in health benefit costs. And there is part of PERS, which you'll be hearing PERS budget this week. So basically, it's health benefits and PERS, and the bigger portion is health benefits on there.
Okay.
With regards to professional.
But none of that's as a result of the reclass?
There would be a
small incremental.
Okay.
And with regards to professional services, you'll see that there's a policy package that increases. There's an increase of about $22,000 for the testing fees.
Yes,
and that goes to community colleges. That's how you see that increase.
Okay.
There's a policy package.
All right.
That.
Dr. Johnson, I think we'll have Dallas look into the potential of a note with the co-chairs to examine that, at least to reach out for the examination of doing away with the agency as much as it would be some sort of consolidation of the functions of the agency, of the board.
Well, as long as that note speaks to real savings, we don't need two executive directors, we don't need two management folks. I mean, I'm perfectly happy to look at the consolidation. I don't want to put two together and make two, one plus one, and we got a great big. I want to find real savings in combing through it.
And we will see the Department of Revenue budget shortly too, as well. So that's as, and we have already taken some action with regard to hearing the Oregon Board of Accountancy as well. So let's continue to proceed to at least examine that with regard to the co-chairs and the potential of a budget note. And then Senator Winters first, and then Senator Devlin.
I just have a couple questions on page 77, and maybe I missed it. The governor's balanced budget on professional services.
Yes, Representative Patridge brought that up, and that's part of the policy option package. Satish, that was for?
That is for community college, the testing piece. That's the piece that the community college is
not. The pass through.
The pass through, were they not? Oh, I see.
There's an increase, and there's a policy package. It's policy package 102. That increases the professional services amount by $22,855.
It's been, and I guess it's probably static, or it's because of you don't know who's going to be taking the test, because I know your estimate in 0103 was $40,000, and then the request was $28,000, and then the governor requested $50,000.
Mr. Chair.
I'm just trying to get a handle on why there's so many things.
Senator Winters, the reason why we see that change is the board wanted non-limited budget authority for testing fees, and in the government budget we said, no, they need to have limited budget authority. That's why you see the increase is higher than what they're requesting.
Another question, Mr. Chair. Do you participate in the hearing panel? And are you participating in the state hearing panel?
Chair Butler, Senator Winters. Yes, the board uses the hearings officer panel for all contested cases.
How many contested cases have you had?
I think we've had 8 in the last 2 years. The last 3 years go to actually hearings officer panel.
Okay, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to ask a couple of questions basically of Dallas, actually. They relate not simply to, in a small way, to this agency, but to others. On the PERS adjustment, is what's figured in these budgets what the new PERS rate is effective July 1st, or is it what the governor anticipated the rate will be? And my understanding is that the PERS board will adjust their July 1st rate based on the action that the legislature takes by May 1st. But they will adjust it later on any action taken after July or after May 1st.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so a number of questions there. But first, let me. The rate in the governor's budget for PERS is 20.28%. The rate that the board has publicly said it will put in place, barring any change in legislation, is 23.64% for state agencies. House Bill 2001 was passed, which and has been signed into law, would reduce that 23.64% by about 2.08 percentage points. That doesn't get us down yet to the 20.28 in the governor's balanced budget. House Bill 2004 is in Senator Corcoran's General Government Committee, has passed the House, and has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means to address that very issue, sir. And that is because there are two components. The House Bill 2004 is the implementation of the actuarial or the new mortality tables. And the reason we've had asked that it be referred to Ways and Means is that we want to tie down with more precision the adjustment to the rate, because it gets us very close to what's in the governor's balanced budget, and also the impact on PERS operations and whether it will need additional limitation, not only in this biennium but for 2003-2005, to implement those new tables under that bill. The PERS staff has been promoting a May 1st drop dead date for passage of legislation in order to get new rates fleshed out by the actuary so that rates can be adjusted with certainty and on July 1st. There's some discussion in this building, or certain of your staff may not see eye to eye with that need, that the rate, once it's known, can be promulgated and adjusted, and
That grinding sound that we hear is what's happening with 203 in the Senate right now. What I understand is that there is a senator who is taking some degree of exception to 203 continuing, and Representative or Senator Winters is going to have to talk to her members of her caucus, because I understand that's where it's at. So.
2003 is still in the House.
2004
is in.
Get your chambers correct.
Okay.
Your pardon, and I anticipate 2004 coming out relatively soon.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Out of,
we're looking forward to your passage of 2003 as well.
Not the Senate that's been dealing with it.
If I may, the co-chairs also are looking at it, have had recent discussion with the chairs of both the House PERS Committee and the Senate General Government Committee on other legislation that has been introduced and the potential impact on dropping rates, causing them to drop even below the governor's balanced budget number of 20.28 percentage points.
Okay. One follow-up to this, too, and I'm just actually trying to get a target on some of these costs. On the medical costs, the medical, dental, vision benefits, since those are employees select those on an annual basis as opposed to a fiscal year basis. Are we under a current contract already for the next biennium, or is it just simply this 1 year that we're under contract for the rates? And these are
that is done annually. And in developing the budget, there's a flat amount that has been put there per month, and I believe it's $575 per employee per month. It's somewhere around $575. And the contract for the next year, they haven't started that yet.
But even in the current year, I know they're supplementing it from reserves. In the current year, they're paying something in the neighborhood of $750. They're supplementing the coverage actually from reserves.
I'll have to check on that.
Okay.
Representative Johnson and Representative Patridge.
I'm going to change the subject. So if Representative Patridge wants to stay in this.
Representative Patridge is still on page 76. 74 on the budget, current budget. So let's do that.
I just want to reemphasize the point that you made. They're having their fines and forfeitures jump from 18,252, which are the 0103 estimates, almost 40%, up to $30,000, and using that as a budget balancing tool. As you said previously, I just think we need to reexamine this as we look at the budget. I mean, they haven't had a history of being up at $30,000. They're using this as a budget balancer. Is what it looks like. So I just want to make sure we're cognizant.
To the extent that those rates are confiscatory, I think we would all have some degree of angst. Ron, did you want to respond to that?
Yes, sir. Chair Butler, Representative Patridge. The board does not want to go out there and find more people to be able to balance its budget. It is carrying right now an accounts receivable that in the past has really not been looked on or has been followed up on, and this simply is a reflection of our commitment to take the current accounts receivable, which is close to $200,000, and
good job, Representative Winter.
He knows my questions.
And actually do some steps to try to collect that.
All right.
Money that's out there.
Good. That's a good explanation, then. I appreciate that.
And that's the segue, Mr. Chair.
He opened the door.
He opened the door.
Uh-oh. Representative Johnson and then Senator Winters.
These are complimentary questions. I noticed, and now I'm back on your handout, with the presentation materials, page 31. It appears that you've got some orders, and then when you slip over onto the next page, it's complaints in the comments. A lot of them are no violation, and I understand that. A lot of them are mediated. Who does the mediation?
Chair Bumber, Representative Johnson. One of the things is in the position that I hold or held or is the compliance specialist job, and my job is to try to get the parties together to a reasonable solution at the least amount of cost. And if I can get
the consumer and the preparer together, and they agree. They take care of the problem, then that's what we call as mediated. We don't take it any further because the consumer is happy with what has happened in that instance.
And are there fines, follow up, Mr. Chair,
fines attached
with any of these mediations?
There are no fines attached, and that is the purpose. Whenever you fine someone, then you open yourself up for, as Senator Winters alluded to, the hearings officer panel. They have the ability to appeal that fine, and then we have a lot of costs.
And that's my point, that if, as Representative Patridge has pointed out, it's possible that the fines and forfeitures become a budget balancing tool, and it appears that you have used mediation successfully in a number of instances, although I'm worried about the magnitude of the complaint being, the resolution being a mediation. It seems to me that you've got a built-in disincentive to reach these mediated settlements.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, it is not a disincentive. That is what we want to do. Just because you find someone, as an example, I talked earlier about a accounts receivable out there of $200,000, just because you find someone doesn't necessarily mean you get your money in the office to fund your agency with. So just finding people does not solve the problem. What solves the problem is getting these people's records back to them, getting somebody to take care of the problem that the consumer has at that time for the least amount of cost. So it is not a our board encourages us to mediate, and many of the cases that I bring before the board that I'm not comfortable mediating themselves is they will also mediate that.
One last thought. Back on page 31, where you actually have orders issued, one of these folks on this list I'm aware of still has a sign out indicating tax preparer. When there's a final order that has been entered, are these people still doing preparations?
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, I believe the one that you're talking about...
We don't have to say it on the record. I just...
Actually is born in the board side. We have attempted to stop this tax preparation. He actually has a restraining order against him, but if you notice the sign... actually just says income tax returns. And that does not say personal income tax returns, and according to his lawyer and our lawyer, he is not violating the temporary restraining order. It's a battle. We're constantly trying to stop that from happening. This last year, I understand that person has hired a certified public accountant, and that certified public accountant is inside the building preparing the income tax returns. Last year, he had hired a licensed tax consultant, and we had interviewed that person. And when there was some disagreement between the two of them, that licensed tax consultant quit.
Okay, well,
I didn't answer your question. When there's a final order, then yes.
They're out of business.
If that was part of the sanction, many of the times a final order could just be $1,000 for a violation, and that's the final order. They're not necessarily out of business.
Okay.
In this case here, yes, they should have been out of business, but as you can see, the case is actually in the Court of Appeals, and there was a separate case that went through the county court that is also being tried at the same time, so they're both meeting at the Court of Appeals, and that should be decided at some time.
I just wanted to call the attention at that point that the amounts budgeted for attorney general fees are actually only up modestly from $35,000 to $37,000 really. So those are up very modestly, and I assume that when you've got a $35,000 fine against someone affirmed without opinion settled for $35,000, that's in the process of being collected. Is it then the $35,000 or?
Chair Butler, that has been collected.
Has been collected. And Senator Winters, she's going to talk to you about your accounts receivable now.
Yes, she is. thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator?
A couple of questions. One is, how old are your accounts receivables? And what are the steps that you're using to collect your accounts receivable?
Chair Butler, Senator Winters, some of the accounts receivables are quite old.
Then my question is, why have you not turned those old accounts over?
Those accounts are being collected at a collection agency at this time.
They have been turned over.
Yes, they have. They have been turned over. But what another thing that the board has tried to do, our collection agency is unable to lien property or garnish wages or things like this. Step this last, this, fact, this last probably 6 to 8 months. I come from the Department of Revenue, and I was a field agent for them, so I have kind of a collection background. And we have actually put liens in the counties on all of our fines that are out there. And so now if somebody tries to buy a home or refinance their home or buy some property, we are actually in the way. That is one step that we have taken. It's a small step, but it's a step we've taken.
Follow. My concern is that state agencies traditionally are not in the collection business. You know, they levy fines and they levy penalties, and state agencies historically have also have huge receivables because they're not in the business of collecting, and as a result, they're attempting to do two things. They're attempting to operate based on their statute, then they're also attempting to become collection agencies, and that's why I ask you what steps are you using, whether or not you're turning them over to revenue. You know, so the revenue does have, with inside their system, the ability to collect or turning them over to private collectors and not, you know, sitting on them for long extended periods of time. And, you know, I appreciate that you have a prior background from revenue, but I also appreciate that doing dual roles, you know, sometimes did not help to expedite the process of collection, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Chair Butler, maybe I didn't speak well. We are not collecting the accounts at the Board of Tax Practitioners. All of those accounts are turned over to either the Department of Revenue or a private collection agency. I simply filed these liens to add to the action that was already taking place on there.
Can you give me some timelines? As you said, the accounts were old. Can you give me some timelines of when you do what with an account?
Once a final order, I'm sorry, Chair Butler, Senator Winters. Once a final order is taking place and there is no more appeal rights, and so there is a sanction that's out there, a fine that's out there, then they have 60 days to pay that fine. Once 60 days has passed, then that account then is assigned to either the Department of Revenue or a private collection agency. Right off the bat, it goes away.
Thank you, very good. Just for my curiosity, can you give me, just I don't need to know the name of them, but the age of the accounts?
Do you have an aging of those, Ron?
I do not, but I could bring you that.
Yeah, I think that would help augment the $30,000 that we've got in the revenue side.
In the revenue side of it.
You bet. Further questions then for Ron or Joyce this time? Hearing and seeing none, we'll go ahead then and close the public hearing on House Bill 5053, the State Board of Tax Practitioners. And we'll pick this back up. And Satish, I would like to have you work with Dallas on the potential for language for a budget note relative to seeking other ways to be able to consolidate the administration and the mission, if you could, please. Thank you. With that, we will go ahead and close the public hearing. And tomorrow, colleagues, we're...